Dr. Zuzulak?
Here.
Mr. Dougherty?
Here.
Mr. Hawley?
Here.
Mr. Pepe? Mr. McGoldrick?
Here.
Mr. Neff?
Here.
Mr. Cacamo? Mr. Josko?
Here.
Mr. Kropinski?
Here.
Mr. Crowder?
Here.
Mr. Curtis?
Here.
Mr. Berth?
Here.
Ms. Majewski?
Thank you. Do you have any procedural notice?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a first timer, so. Pursuant to Section 5 of the Open Public Meetings Act, this meeting has been duly advertised in accordance with law by publication in the official newspapers of the borough and by posting in Borough Hall by the borough clerk as part of the annual notice. This meeting is a quasi-judicial meeting. Any comments or questions must be limited to the issues that are relevant to what the board may legally consider in reaching a decision. Decorum appropriate to a judicial hearing must be maintained at all times. But the business is to the mind
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, at this time, we'll open up a comment for a not on the agenda.
There's no one at home.
Seeing none. Any litigation?
Please do announce if there is none.
Very good. Other business. We will continue the cannabis subcommittee discussion. Just a quick update. Just to bring everybody up to date, we began this discussion at the last meeting. We convened the subcommittee to do a deeper dive, and we're very grateful for the time that the subcommittee put in for the last month. And they will now give us a presentation. Sure.
I will.
Hello.
Thank you. We have a few items for discussion for the board. One of them was retail manufacturing on First Avenue. Specific to the way that the ordinance reads, my understanding, and I'm open to correction, it's limited. Most of First Avenue is limited based on what is in the existing ordinance from East Mount to so that leaves the historic business district. So it was our opinion that it would be able to sustain the amount of traffic and the parking that would require for a new business, let alone a cannabis business, which from our understanding was uniting town and some other areas. I did some research on traffic studies in California. I know they're not New Jersey specific, but there was an increase in about 200% traffic and it's stop and go traffic. So it's, you know, this amount of traffic that would be coming in all the way up to the historic business district and then coming out. So we selected or chose to eliminate that. It's further defined in the ITE trip generation, the 10 positions, but that's for Massachusetts and California. But it does specifically say in there that where we can pull the data for the marijuana dispensary traffic count if we need to. I didn't find anything for New Jersey specific, but there's good data that's included that identified the increase of traffic that is expected. So we do expect this to be a lot more than just a regular business. So number two,
sorry, Dr. Before we move on away from First Avenue, just a point of two quick points of clarification. So the very small part of First Avenue from East Garfield to Route 36 Memorial Parkway is
East Mount.
So there is actually, yes, the exclusion zone runs from East Garfield to East Mount and near the school, but there is a very small part of the central business district that encompasses East Garfield to Route 36. So,
right. So that probably would be covered with the
recommendation.
Buffer distance from the school.
Okay.
I'll jump to that now and then go back to the other side.
And just one more very slight clarification too. So manufacturing is a specific category of business, and that's only in the ordinance specified for the light industrial zone. So it's so retail is separate.
Okay.
So manufacturing would be only light industrial, so that would not be a consideration for First Avenue.
So just retail on First Avenue?
Yes. Yes.
Excellent.
Thank you.
To jump over to the commercial business district, so we had split ideas on it, so I'll send that mine, and then I'll pass it over to the students. So I'm of the opinion that the 1,000-foot buffer should be designated for the comprehensive drug format, which does still include marijuana. It does specifically reference medical marijuana. The only reason I think it is a federal law, and it does identify Schedule 1 controlled substance, and it is my opinion, that these laws are put in place by subject matter experts based on hours of testimony, and I, the planning board, would feel comfortable modifying that. But that's my opinion, so I'm going to kick it over because there's some other great comments for reducing that.
And looking at some of the reform law from New Jersey, what it's categorized as, and some of the scale and space that we saw with other New Jersey towns have varying distances of buffer, anywhere from 200 feet to 250 to 500 to 750 to 1,000. Looking at it, I thought 500 would be a fair compromise. We could essentially put everything into the light industrial district. Anyways, that was pretty much the footage to get out of the central business district and the light industrial district.
And there is language in the master plan that is focused on developing and so forth.
Furthermore, to the light industrial district, wouldn't be in any type of pedestrian route for children going or coming from school. So I thought that was also something that they didn't take into consideration.
So I'm just going to counter that. We're a walking district, so it would be in the back. It would be in the footpath of students, just by the nature of the town. So I would think that it would impact them to some degree. So open to discussion.
So just for some context, I did some research on what other states are doing with respect to distance. So Massachusetts, which in my opinion is probably the one state on the East Coast that is kind of most analogous to New Jersey in terms of its demographics and types of communities, minimum of 500 feet, but municipalities can set a larger distance from schools and synagogues and churches if they so choose. Connecticut has not opened any recreational or adult use cannabis retail locations yet. They passed their law about a year ago. They have not set a minimum distance. And then just in terms of just for context to add to what Mr. Kopinski was saying, we had done some measurements from the entrance of the school. That the statute in Massachusetts says from the main entrance of the school, it is approximately 577 feet from the main entrance of Atlanta Collins Elementary to the west side of West Avenue from that entrance. So that would be the beginning of the light industrial zone in that case. So just for context of the distance and
the 500.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So, thank you.
Want to carry on?
Yeah.
Can I just insert something here? Because the ordinance, the way it's written, is with respect to this buffer situation, is linear. It's First Avenue from this to this.
Right.
Whereas what you're discussing is more of a circular zone. It's going to go from the perimeter of the property a distance of X feet all the way around. So just for my purposes, the board isn't interested in a linear situation. Your recommendation would be to do a buffer from the perimeter of the property.
Yes, that was the recommendation.
Thank you.
Okay, so to that point, and then I can elaborate more on this, potentially a neighborhood impact plan that could provide more information on the economic impact to retailers in our area in addition to the traffic issue. and then, if so desired, maybe the impact of potential increased cannabis use, and why it should be buffered from a school. That is open for discussion. It was just something that I had seen in other ordinances, and maybe to bring it to this board for discussion. And you write your scope of work based on your interests and what would benefit the town and, you know, what would benefit, Highlands residents as a whole.
Who would perform the neighborhood impact plan? Would that be an outside engineer or a planner of some sort?
Yeah, that would be, that would be a question, I guess, like, would the council execute that, or would they want to put it in the ordinance for the retailer or the manufacturer to execute?
Right, and it, you know, it's important to keep in mind that we're not rewriting the ordinance for them.
Yeah.
You know, these are just recommendations, so that's a recommendation, and they can take that recommendation and
or not.
They can ignore it, or they can accept it, and then, mm-hmm. you know.
Correct.
So they can ignore it for the time being, and then research sure. it, and then come back and do it.
And also be in a condition of use there that I have to come here once a day anyway, and we can request a traffic study from the individual.
Which is?
That is number three.
Number three.
We would hope that the ordinance would require a traffic management plan.
We had the option of requiring that from anybody that comes before us.
Okay. So that would be the traffic management plan would help determine the number of parking spaces based on the square footage, the level of impact that First Avenue or 36 was sustained, would help us identify best location for a business to thrive. So that would be one of the suggestions. We also just have to limit the number, which is already in the ordinance, so we work with that. Hours of operation, we work with that. And the blackout windows, I think it was consensus that we would prefer not to have that in the ordinance. It can be interpreted, and from our fellow planner here, this can be interpreted as being in violation of the sign ordinance. That's just an argument to have, but I also think that it would be unsightly. So, pending any questions, that concludes the comments from the subcommittee.
I have a question, just seeking some clarity on the conditional use. Maybe this is a question for Mr. Stieb. If this ordinance as written or amended passes, and this is an allowed use in a zone, when would a retailer, for example, need to come before this board? When they're creating a new use in a space, or if they're replacing a retail space, would they need to come to the board?
Any conditional use has to come to the board.
Any conditional, any at all?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And also keep in mind, too, that when we're addressing Memorial Parkway and West Valley, that is a state highway or state road. They also would have to get approvals from the state DOT for ingress, egress, and all the parking, everything.
Okay.
Just one other thing I'll throw in is I was looking at this and Doug as well. Under the first item, you may want to suggest that the governing body, in its further research, take a look at the ITD Trip Generation Manual and compare with the uses that are permitted in these zones, what the cannabis establishment, how they would compare. If they are significantly greater, then they may want to adopt specific standard for parking, let's say, for those establishments, which currently in the ordinance, your conditional uses have the parking standards in that portion of the ordinance, rather than in the general parking standards in the ordinance. So they might want to take a look at that. If they look at it and they find that there's no increase over uses that are permitted, then they may say, well, you know, we'll put in the standard, but it's going to be consistent with what the ITD says.
If I could just elaborate on that a little bit. I did ask my traffic department to review ITE for available data. Version 10 had very limited data and studies. We did receive a copy of edition 11, which has there's a lot more. There's a lot more studies. So 30 studies. The actual AM, PM, and weekend peaks came down with the additional studies. So I think, as Mr. Stive mentioned, it would be a good exercise to review those PM, those peak trips per the studies versus the permitted uses currently in the zone. Just as an example, in addition 11, the highest peak I'm seeing is a Saturday peak at 36 vehicles per 1,000 square feet. If you draw a parallel to, I just grabbed two other uses very quickly. I said 36 vehicles per 1,000 square feet of marijuana dispensary for retail. If you compare that to a convenience market, Land Use Code 851, they have an AM peak of 68 trips. Oh, wow. So, you know, a 36 versus 68.
1,000?
Correct. A coffee and donut shop, Land Use Code 936, with no drive-through, has a AM weekday peak of 79 trips. So I think, as Mr. Stive mentioned, you do have retail in your current parking ordinance. You do have manufacturing and warehousing in your current ordinance, which I would assume these would fit into unless they're further modified. The last thing I did want to add was with regards to the conditional use. The ordinance as drafted recommends these specific uses to be permitted conditionally, provided they meet the outlined conditions. And condition F is the last condition in the draft, and it's identified as bulk requirements, and all bulk requirements shall be in accordance with the borough code. To increase clarity and to improve that, our code doesn't really define bulk requirements. It's a general term that we all recognize. We have a bulk schedule, but the bulk schedule talks about the setbacks and lot coverage and that kind of, but there's other sections under Chapter 150 that may have been intended to apply the parking. Maybe the parking one. And I wouldn't want to have to debate or interpret that section, that condition specifically. So it could be a good recommendation to send back to Mayor and Council that condition F be expanded or clarified a little bit.
I would say absolutely. Anybody have a disagree?
Seems very
more than reasonable.
Important.
And one other thing that I thought about and talked about as well is that you might want to suggest to the governing body that they get their zoning map and do a 200-foot buffer, a 500-foot buffer, a 1,000-foot buffer circle on that map to see to what extent they're affecting what zones. I think that would give them a much better visual image of, okay, what is the impact?
And they can easily create an image to put up on the screens or to put up, you know, during a meeting. That way, right. There's no guessing. You take the guesswork completely out of it.
Absolutely. And you can show the trip generation. So if you want to put them on the west side, like how the tour shopping is going to go, if it's going to be 36 max on a Saturday, you know what that would look like for residents.
Mm-hmm. All right.
The only other thing I would add is, possibly, if everybody's in agreement, I know there was one question about foot traffic lines and people waiting to get into these establishments. If that were the case, the governing body may want to limit that to a study on whether it's impacting foot traffic on First Avenue or whatever zone it might be in. And if so, after the first 2 weeks, then they determine that would have to go to by appointment only for a year or two or whatever, or 6 months, whatever length of time they deem necessary to quill that.
That's a very good point. Very good point, particularly on First Avenue.
Do you have any studies on the impact of the police in the communities where these establishments are? Like, is it adding to taken away from the police force, you know, as far as, you know, having to get involved or monitoring, you know, people trying to get into the establishments, you know, places of business.
I mean, there's information out there. There's plenty of information out there. That's where the neighborhood impact plan would come into play. The increased usage, you know, what does that do for us and the traffic and other ideas, but there's a lot of information out there.
I didn't find anything directly or with that. The only thing that was, there were some townships that wanted to see fencing or different things around certain facilities to further safen like the structure. So there's a limit on fence height or different things like that in particular for that type of business. But that was the only thing really in terms of security. That was increased or was different from maybe other businesses.
And that would be kind of tough being that we have zero setback.
Yeah, I'm thinking more along the lines of like, you know, having to get involved with crowd control or things, not so much a burglar.
Or even having to add another officer. Yeah.
So in the ordinance as written in section 211-14, section E, I just saw it. Number three, all licensed cannabis establishments shall have at least one privately licensed security guard stationed at each facility during operation.
Yeah,
so just pointing that out.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Kaminsky, Dr. Zuzulak, were there any other comments beyond the retail establishments on delivery or manufacturing, either the other two categories of businesses that are proposed?
No, I think we inherently knew the manufacturing wouldn't be, I mean, I put it on here, but that it wouldn't fit on First Avenue, so that would have been my primary concern. Clearly, my other concern is the traffic and the bubble from the school. I do want to reference this, the traffic study that I was referencing before from California. There was, like, it was a nursery before and then turned into a marijuana dispensary, and what they had anticipated was the original was 200 trips for the nursery and it was increased to 774 for the marijuana dispensary. So that was just one of the latest traffic studies that was done, you know, just to not to keep adding fuel to the fire, but that was what I had referenced.
Sure.
I was referencing the numbers before. But outside of that, there was that, just making sure that we understand what the buffer is and where we anticipate this location to be, and then how it would impact Atlantic Island's business.
Sure.
And
thank you.
But at 774, that's 90-some-odd cars per hour. How would that jive with 30?
That was a general, the manual is kind of general in nature, and it is new, and they're coming up with these numbers that these dispensaries open. This one is, I wanted to reference it specifically because it is an actual business and they did a traffic plan for their business. And so that's what they would have done. So if they find a building, they'll say, this is normally what the anticipated trip volume would be. This is what we think it's going to be based on Eatontown and the other areas near us. I mean, Princeton Town, if you want to. But I think they had a 1,000-foot offset from their stall. The Princeton had offered, but now you're going there. So as these things are coming into play, you're getting real time data, which will update the manuals.
So these were studies with other dispensaries or retail establishments in the area?
No.
Or, so, I mean...
Jersey Girl's deadline, and I couldn't find it. I couldn't find the data on it. Not that I was diagnosed.
So I think it would be much different if there's the fewer number of these retail establishments there are, there's only the other two or whatever in Monmouth County, that would be a greater influx than if there were five. And they bring 15 towns or whatever. So I would think that the traffic impact would be much greater when there's only two other establishments in Neptune and Eatontown.
Right. Yeah, based on their business plan too, what they estimate.
One thing we did discuss too, I wasn't sure if it fell under our purview, was to limit the size of the business, mm-hmm. square footage wise, to maybe reduce the intensity of that. So limiting it to like a 2,500 square feet, how many employees they could have, different things like that to perhaps, you know, for lack of a better term, having like a Costco, up campus and down.
Would that be retail space, or is that the entire facility that's 2,500, or is that floor space?
Some of the stuff I did some research on, there was two different things from different for retail and different for manufacturing. For the manufacturing, it was 2,500 square feet, I think, linear, and then it couldn't go above a certain height as well. So there's different things that perhaps, you know, could be reduced to kind of make it into a micro business. There's another thing too where they wanted to limit it to residents of New Jersey that have lived here for the past 2 years, which would maybe help increase people's, you know, dedication to the local community. So, but wasn't sure necessarily from our vantage point of how far those recommendations to go.
Potential issue. You know, putting a class, letting a class for business like that, and saying, "Oh, you're out of town, you don't be able to come in here." And I think you've got a potential issue with that.
Well, thank you very much, subcommittee. That was a lot of work you put in over the last couple of weeks, and we really appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, shall I put this discussion into a format that can be sent out to all the board members for approval to submit to the governing body?
If you would, please, that would be perfect.
If we could just take a moment, either question or
just like, what's the plan for the council at this point now?
So that's what I was going to get to. So right now, the plan for the council is the is public hearing and possible adoption will be on August 11th, which is 1 week from tonight. In terms of turning around a document from this board, is that a reasonable timeline?
Monday.
Seems very reasonable to me.
We wouldn't have to comment on that or anything. We just send it out to the
government body. We could email it to board members for their approval before it goes out. I would prefer to have the board say, yes, this accurately synopsizes what our discussions were and in what direction we were going.
Sure. And I want to be considered a quorum.
Yeah. Good day. Everybody will have access to email Monday.
Depends on what if it's a beach. No, just kidding. On behalf of the council, thank you very much, everybody, for this conversation and the subcommittee for putting in the work. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep, thank you for listening. Thank you for taking it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Can we get a motion to adjourn this part of the meeting?
I'll second.
On paper.
Aye.
Okay, now to the regular meeting. Roll call, please.
Dr. Zuzulak?
Here.
Mr. Dockerty?
Here.
Mr. Hawley?
Here.
Mr. Pepe? Mr. McGoldrick?
Here.
Mr. Neff?
Here.
Mr. Cacamo? Mr. Drosko?
Here.
Mr. Kropinski?
Here.
Mr. Crowder?
Here.
Mr. Curtis?
Here.
Mr. Berth?
Here.
Ms. Majewski?
Are you here? Oh, I'm sorry. So I heard.
No, not the, the last one's a FAR. So you have to step down. Or 22-08. No, I'm sorry. 22-08.
Okay. Okay, on to approval of attorney vouchers for June 2022.
I move. Second.
Dr. Zuzulak?
Yes.
Mr. Dockerty?
Yes.
Mr. Hawley?
Yes.
Mr. McGoldrick?
Yes.
Mr. Neff?
Yes.
Mr. Drosko?
Yes.
Mr. Kropinski?
Yes.
Mr. Crowder?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Approval for the minutes of the last meeting, July 7th, 2022?
I make a motion to accept.
Second.
Dr. Zuzulak?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Hawley?
Yes.
Mr. McGoldrick?
Yes.
Mr. Neff?
Yes.
Mr. Josko?
Yes.
Mr. Kropinski?
Yes.
Mr. Crowther?
Yes.
Mr. Britt?
Yes.
Approval of the resolution PB22-07, Block 34, Lot 5, 104 Asbury Avenue, Pascowich. Application for bulk variances.
I'll move that, Dougherty.
Second. Neff.
Dr. Zuzulak?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Hawley?
Yes.
Mr. McGoldrick?
Yes.
Mr. Neff?
Yes.
Mr. Josko?
Yes.
Mr. Kropinski?
Yes.
And on to our first application, PB22-03, Block 97, Lot 13, 68 First Avenue, True North Management LLC, Wickersham. Application for minor site plan and change of use.
Mr. Chairman, I've reviewed service in connection with this application. The service is in order, and the board does have jurisdiction to hear the case this evening. And I'm aware of the following exhibits that the board has received in connection with the applications. Exhibit A1 is a zoning review from Michelle Clark that's dated July 17, 2021. Exhibit A2 is a survey prepared by Thomas P. Sanford, PA, that's dated October 3, 2017. Exhibit A3 is an application for variance that's dated October 21, 2021. Exhibit A4 is a minor site plan prepared by Eastern Civil Engineering that's dated January 26, 2022, revised April 1, 2022. Exhibit A5 is review number one from your engineer, Sam and Associates, that's dated February 25, 2022. Exhibit A6 is an operations plan of True North Management LLC that's dated July 15, 2021. Exhibit A7 is review number two from your engineer CM Associates that's dated June 8, 2022. And Exhibit 8 is a series of 12 photographs of the exterior and interior of the existing building. Those are the exhibits that I'm aware of so far, and Mr. Wolf is here on behalf of the app.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Hopefully will be fairly simple. My client is True North Management, and he is the owner of the building at 68 First Avenue. Come before the board for minor site plan approval, and also for several, I would call them loose ends, that I think we should be able to tie up fairly easily. Tonight, with a history of the ownership and use of the property, which will be testified to by Fred Rass, the previous owner of the property, the current use and proposed use testimony will be given to you not by Mr. Wickersham, who is the owner of the property, but by Brendan Soleil, who is his manager. He's going to testify to the layout to where certain medical offices are going to be located. And then we will have the testimony of Mr. Andrew Stockton of Eastern Engineering, who prepared the site plan. But it will also give some testimony on the issue of parking. But I will say that, legally speaking, the parking within 600 feet of the municipal lot was a pre-existing non-conforming use at the time that my client bought the property. So although there is some issues as the amount of parking necessary, is our position in this case that as a matter of law, we are entitled to that parking use to be continued. And Mr. Stockton will also testify to the actual amount of additional parking that will be necessary. So Fred, can you come up?
Please raise your right hand and be sworn to you this or affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I do.
And name and address.
My name is Frederick John Rass III, 49 8th Avenue, Atlantic Islands.
Mr. Rast, did you at one point own 68 First Avenue?
Yes, I did.
When did you acquire that property?
In 2004.
How long have you lived in this town?
My whole life.
Okay. Are you familiar with the ownership of that property on First Avenue?
Yes.
And were you familiar with the parking regulations at the time that you acquired the property?
Yes.
And before that?
Yes.
And after that?
Yes.
Okay. When was that building constructed?
I was about 13 years old, and there was a fire where the bagel store is, used to be the Heifetz. Mr. and Mrs. Heifetz had a 5 and 10. It burned down to the first floor. They had Monte Grosso Construction build the current building, 68 First Avenue, so it's quite a while ago. I'm going to be 78, so it was a while back. But anyway, Mohammed Hanafi bought the building, I believe, around probably 7 to 10 days, years, before I bought the property in 2004. Mohammed Hanafi resides in town. He created a medical center. He had 12 exam rooms. He had doctors that were there in the building. When I bought the building, it still had the exam rooms. It also had a doctor or medical assistant that was part of Mohammed's group of people that were still in the building. Almost immediately, I was approached to rent space to Mary Hayden, who is a licensed physical therapist who lived in town. Going through the CFO for her to come in, I met resistance from, at that time it was Bernie Frotten was the code enforcement officer, and he had identified that the ordinance in town didn't allow personal services to include massage parlors. I came before a planning board, I don't know the exact date, but it was around shortly after I owned the place, and it was approved by the planning board that she wasn't a massage parlor, that she was a licensed physical therapist, massage therapist.
How long did Mary Hayden, how long was she a tenant in your building?
Ooh, quite a while. Shortly after she came in, Julie Page, Dr. Julie Page, chiropractor, came in. And the two of them worked together in the building for quite a while. And then Julie became pregnant, and her and her husband bought a house on the highway, and they moved their business there. Mary stayed for a while. And then Heather Rahmenbacher came in. She was also a licensed physical therapist. Heather was there when I sold the building to Dave Wickersham, which was around 2017.
And Mr. Wickersham was the principal of True North Management.
Yes, correct. Yeah, and I was the owner, my wife and I were the owner of 68 First Avenue LLC.
So it'd be fair to say that at the time that you sold the property to Mr. Wickersham, there were medical uses already in that property.
Absolutely, and they were continued medical uses from Mohammed Hanafi, which is Stardusty, I think it was his LLC. But anyway,
so what were the parking requirements that were in effect at the time that you sold the property to Mr. Wickersham?
There was no parking required because we were within that 600 feet of the parking lot that's behind the buildings here on Railroad Avenue. Originally, the ordinance was 600 feet from any of the corners of the property. Of course, that fell within it. And then I understand years later they changed it to 300 feet to the center of the property. But that was after Dave had purchased the property from me. And
okay, Mr. Rath, I'm going to show you, maybe we should mark this as A9. It's a copy of ordinance number 07-2018. Would you look at that comment, at the ordinance that you're referring to?
Yeah, it's an ordinance amending the parking distance.
And does it make reference to the previous distance between the geometric center of the municipal parking lot and the property in question?
Yes, it referenced geometric center, but I know that the original ordinance didn't talk about the center of the property either. It was any of the edges of the property, but clearly that fit. Yeah, at the time that I saw it.
600 feet from
absolutely. There. Absolutely. Now, First Avenue is about 50 feet across, so 300 feet would be about six times the distance of First Avenue. I believe that even under the 300-foot restriction, well, it was grandfathered, clearly, and it was one of the older buildings in First Avenue. But even the 300 feet, I'm guessing, is probably still in compliance with the ordinance.
Okay. Can you describe the layout of the interior of the building, the floor plan, basically, at the time you sold it to Mr. Wickersham?
When I sold it to him?
Yes.
Yeah, I had... there's two entrances in the building with a U-shaped hall through the building, which is the same condition it was when I bought it. When I bought it from Muhammad Hanafi, there was 12 separate exam rooms, including x-ray and everything else in the building. Then gradually I brought in other clients tenants into the building, and but I still maintained Mary, and then of course Julie, and then of course Heather during the entire time that I owned it. And as I said, Heather was still there when I sold it to Dave. I understand that she only moved out, might have been a year after he was there or something, I'm not sure. But as soon as he came in, he created a test center for COVID-19, and he was also supplying equipment to clean up areas.
How do you know that? I know you weren't mayor at the time, but were you involved in the goings on?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I was.
Did the town have to pay for these tests?
The COVID-19 tests?
Yes, for members of the town.
To my knowledge, no. I guess somebody paid Dave, but I'm not sure. But it's, in my opinion, number one, it's grandfathered. Clearly, it's one of the older buildings on First Avenue, long before some of the newer buildings are in. It clearly fit into the category when I bought it, when Muhammad bought it, and when Heifetz had it, and of course when Dave had it, that it was within the category that they required no parking. No additional parking, because it fell within that. Now, of course, you've got other buildings that built up, but that's got nothing to do with the fact that that was there so many years and it was grandfathered, in my opinion, grandfathered, and the fact that you consistently had medical services within that building all of these years. And like I said, Dave, right in the beginning, started medical services, so I don't see any change. There's other places in there, but there's still consistent use of a medical related facility within the building, still as far back as I said, Muhammad bought it. And that might have been 97, 98, something like that. 1997, 1990. Yes.
Okay, so I have.
Unless there's any questions.
No problem, Wilfred.
Questions from the board? Seeing none, any questions from the public? No. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Fred.
Thank you.
Sir, would you raise your right hand if you swear before?
Yes.
Do you swear or affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding will be the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
And state your name and address.
Brendan Soul, 13 East Garfield Avenue, Atlantic Highlands.
Mr. Soul, you see the site plan on the board?
I do.
And are you familiar with that, and what is that?
That is a site plan for the property 68 First Avenue.
Okay, how are you involved with that property?
I am a property manager of that building.
And who is the owner of that building?
David Wickersham.
And does he have an LLC?
Yes, a True North manager.
Okay. And are you an employee of True North Management?
I am, yes.
And representative of True North Management?
Yes.
And with respect to 68 First Avenue, what exactly are your duties?
I oversee work that's done on the building, everything from HVAC, painting, carpeting, roofing, electric, all the maintenance of the building. I'm also involved in meeting potential new tenants and also negotiating leases and collecting the rent and depositing that every month.
So would you say that you negotiated the leases?
Yes.
Are you familiar with all of the current tenants?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Can we go through the tenants, not including the proposed spot for medical use?
Sure.
Maybe this will help you? Or
yeah, well, I actually have a list of all the current tenants. Sure.
Okay, Mr. Staub, I'd like to mark this as an informal floor plan that was prepared by Mr. Wickersham and sent to us. We can work. I just have the one copy. Is it A10?
It's the A10.
What?
Yes.
You want me to hand it up?
Why don't you bring it up? And it's a floor plan of the building with a red highlighted area.
That's correct.
Okay, do you see that?
I do.
That's an informal floor plan, not made to scale. And you saw that today?
I did, yes.
Is that a fair approximation of the actual, of what an actual floor plan would be if we had an architect do it?
It is, yes.
Okay, for purposes of your describing the current use of the property, is that sufficient for you?
Yes.
And do you know who prepared that?
I believe David Wickersham.
Okay. So, why don't you tell us about the tenants not involved in medical treatments?
Okay, great. The first tenant would be a salon at 68. They are a hair salon. I've been there for several years. Then there's also a travel agency called Prestige Travel. They've been a tenant for a couple of years now and interested in renewing. Beacon Hill Realty, VRI, is a real estate agent that has also been there for several years.
And are these located along the northern exterior of the building?
All throughout the building. As you look at the hallway, which is a horseshoe, as Fred referenced, walking into the entrance on the left-hand side.
How many entrances?
There are two entranceways into the building, yeah.
And how much frontage does the property have?
Oh, you know, I'm not exactly sure.
Keep going with the tenants.
Sure. So we've gone through salon, we've gone through Prestige Travel, Beacon Hill Realty. Then we've got True North Management. Their office is in there as well. We've got the Atlantic Highlands Chamber of Commerce located in the building. And then Smithwick Holdings is David Wickersham's company in there as well.
What spot is the spot for COVID testing?
I apologize. That is Test Here. Test Here is in the very back of the building. Suite F is the suite.
Okay. When you started, was COVID-19 testing going on at 68 First Avenue?
When I started in the role as, yes, as property manager?
Yes.
Actually, I started in 2017, so prior to that.
and describe what happened with respect to testing for COVID-19.
Dave Wickersham saw the need and was able to garner the resources available to open the testing center. We had a previous tenant who could not weather, you know, COVID, and they had moved out, and it was a nice big space, so he applied for everything and launched that business.
And was there heavy usage of that testing?
And early on, yes, early on, hundreds of tests.
Were you involved during all of that?
I was involved in launching that business.
And what happened to the testing after COVID, after we came out of the pandemic?
Yeah, there was waves, but over time it began to dissipate. So it's really a fraction now of what it once was.
So are you still performing testing?
I'm not actually involved, but yes, the testing center is still open every day, performing tests, yes.
Okay, now do you know what's proposed for the lots that are marked off with the red magic marker?
Referring to MD Medical, the MD Medical space. I'm not deeply involved in that business, but I've heard Dave Wickersham, the business owner, talk about it. He is, I think, the owner of this business.
Okay, what kind of medical office is proposed?
Yeah, from my understanding, Dave's calling it a boutique office, appointment only. It is, remember in the memo, he wants it to be clear, it's not urgent care. It will be appointment only. Aspects of telemedicine, physicals, occupational physicals, things like that.
And have you built out that space yet?
No, not yet. Waiting for the approved zone.
Okay, now we have, how many, are there, it looks like there would be two rooms?
Exam rooms, yes. Two exam rooms from what I recall, and then maybe two admin areas as well within that space.
What is the total square footage of the area?
760 square foot.
Okay, I have no further questions.
Any questions from the board?
Can you get an example of an occupational physical? Is it truck drivers? Is it what would that
entail? Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I would imagine it to be. I would imagine it to be as you're applying for a position with a company and you need a physical, likely something like that, you would go to this facility.
How the garbage removal in that property?
Put out to the curb.
How would that translate to the medical place?
As I recall, Dave explained twice weekly. Again, I'm not literally involved in testing, but twice weekly, employees from his company take away that and dispose of it. You know,
on the curb.
No, it does not. No, yeah, yeah.
In the business plan, did they speak on how, like, the estimated number of patients, like at a peak time, like how many would be in the building?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I received an email with some overview information. Maybe 6 to 8 a day, I think is what I recall, something like that. It's part of an email.
Is that per room? Sure.
As I understood, that would be per the facility versus per room.
Well,
so
you have medical staff lined up for this?
They're... To what extent you advise? I believe Mr. Wickersham's partner is a physician, a board certified physician with expertise in pediatrics. In order to have the test here, testing center, that there needed to be an association with a physician. Yeah.
I believe A6, in evidence, a letter of July 15, 2021 from Mr. Wickersham on behalf of True North to Michelle Clark more completely sets up the use, the number of people, the hours that the medical offices will be open and other particulars.
More specifically, it says the hours of operation are Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. It says that the appointment booking that they're going to use will be on an appointment basis only, that they anticipate 4 patients to be seen within an hour, 30-minute blocks.
So, 32.
Right.
Any other questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. There was mention of several existing uses. Are you able to provide the square footages associated with each of those uses in the existing condition?
I can reference the business.
Excuse me, so I think that this document can handle that, but. Go on, thanks, sir.
I can reference the businesses as they relate to this. I don't know that you have this in front of you.
Okay. What I'm trying to accomplish is understand the existing square footage per use to come up with an existing parking demand. Compare that to the proposed parking demand provided by your engineer. I don't see the existing parking demand calculated anywhere, and that would just begin with the current square footages of each use. I heard a mention of 700 and change square feet.
760 square feet for the two medical.
For the proposed new space, for MD Medical, that's related to that.
So that doesn't necessarily correlate with your engineer's plan that has medical office space at 3,845 square feet. So if your engineer can handle that correlation, that's fine. I'm just, any existing information that you have, I'd ask that you share that with the board.
He was including these other spaces.
So we'll wait for Mr. Stockton.
Yes.
Okay. Very well. Mr. Romeyer, do you have anything else?
Not at this time, Chairman. Thank you.
Any members of the public have a question? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Please raise your right hand and swear to you to swear affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
Yes, I did.
And name and address.
My name is Andrew Stockton. My company is Eastern Civil Engineering LLC at 31 Grand Tour, Highlands, New Jersey.
Mr. Stockton, do you prepare the minor site plan?
Yes, I did.
And you've got it up on the board, but I'm going to show you a copy of it.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, did you make a calculation of the square footage of the space inside the building devoted to medical uses?
Stockton, before you go there, do you want to just give the board a brief? I mean, I know that you're familiar with
you. I'm sorry, I forget the qualification.
I've appeared before Atlantic Highlands, both the planning board and zoning board, a number of times over the years, but I'm licensed as a professional engineer and land surveyor and professional planner in the state of New Jersey. I'm also licensed as an engineer and land surveyor in the states of Maryland and New York, and as a professional engineer in the state of Connecticut. And I've testified for projects small and large across about 65 different municipalities throughout about half of the counties across the state.
Do board members have any issues with his qualifications?
Good. Thank you.
Can I answer the question? Do you want me to?
Yes. The overall, the whole property has a square footage of about 6,080 square feet. The building footprint occupies about 98% of that, or in total about 5,945 square feet. And you saw, just had some discussion about Exhibit A10, the property owner's sketch with the red line outline of the new MD Medical space on it. Using that sketch with the, I think I did make a tally of the different areas. Just want to make sure I find it and reference it the right way. Here. So with the tally of the different areas, we have for the proposed spaces D and E for MD Medical, that's 760 square feet. The existing spaces occupied by test here are 785 and 190 for a total of 925 square feet. And then the remainder would be, I guess, general office space. And that varies, those units vary in size from about 75 square feet to about 1,250 square feet. So in total, you have 5,945 square feet of building footprint, and then you have 1,725 square feet of existing and proposed medical space, 760 square feet of that being the proposed. And then you have the remainder as the footprint area of the existing mixed office space.
Now, what effect does that have on the parking requirements?
So what I showed on my drawing was an overly conservative estimate of the square footage associated for the medical use based on a preliminary assessment that was given to me about the space intended to be occupied by the medical uses. I showed a total of 3,845 square feet, but the actual number that we just discussed is 1,725 square feet. That 1,725 square feet equates to about 29% of the total building footprint area, and that's important as we get into the parking discussion.
Okay, why don't we keep on that subject? Why is that important?
So what I showed on my exhibit, my plan, was a total parking demand for the project based on my very conservative number for the medical space at 48 parking spaces. But in reality, when you account for only 1,725 parking spaces, that reduces the total down to a requirement for 36 parking spaces for the property, not 48 like I have listed on my plan. But it gets better than that. When you look at ordinance section 150-89B, paragraph 1H, exhibit 9-2, footnote number 2, it says there that there is no need to separate the medical in the mixed-use space so long as the medical doesn't exceed more than one-third of the building footprint, which at 29% we're not over that. So what you would do is just calculate the building footprint based on office space for 4.5 parking spaces per 1,000 square feet, and you come up that way with a parking demand of 27 parking spaces altogether. In my review and prep for tonight's meeting, I looked at Google Earth or aerial mapping images of the surrounding area, and within 300 feet of the front door area of the building, that extends out into the municipal parking lot on the west side of First Avenue, or behind the buildings on the west side of First Avenue, to about two-thirds of that parking area. And counting that and together with on-street parking along First Avenue, I see a total of at least 80 parking spaces within 300 feet. So in that summary, 80 parking spaces are available, 27 parking spaces are technically required for the project, and I think the parking issue is satisfied that way. I think based on what I've been told about the number of employees and staff and the number of visitors that are intended to come for this medical use, I think the real parking demand for the medical use is even going to be a little bit less than that based on three or four staff members and three or four patients per hour coming to the facility.
Okay. In your opinion, under the Atlantic Highlands ordinance that you just cited, does the applicant have to have any on-site parking?
No, and there actually never has been any on-site parking on this building. This building occupies the whole footprint of the property.
And you heard the testimony of Mr. Rath?
I did.
And you've been here a long time too, and your father, do you agree that that's the history of the HDB district with respect to parking?
With respect to this building and the many others along First Avenue too. It's been that way, that there is no real properties in this area with any off-street parking at all.
Do you find that the change of use from before presents any zoning problem, given the fact that medical offices are permitted in this zone?
No, and the way that Mr. Rast explained it, I think certainly at some time in the past, most of that building footprint, more so than what's being proposed here, was actually occupied by medical uses too. So it's a condition that's existed here. It's a condition that is being proposed. So there's no real difference there, except that what's being proposed today is a little bit smaller than what has existed in the past on the property.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Any questions from the board?
If there is requirements for parking spaces, how many handicap parking spaces are required?
For 27 required, technically, I think there's only one, maybe two parking handicap parking spaces.
Of those 80 that you identified, that satisfied it?
Not exactly sure where on First Avenue.
There may be
a space or two that are designated handicap.
What's the distance from, what's the distance requirement? I'm asking for my education.
The distance requirement in your current ordinance?
ADA.
Is 300 feet from the building.
Still 300 feet.
Well, the handicap spaces, I don't think there's a specific distance requirement, but they're supposed to be the most readily available parking spaces. And if they're in your municipal parking lot, it's a safe assumption that they were designed to be in the right spot there.
So she said it would satisfy.
Right.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board?
Done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was a lot of quick math there that wasn't presented with the application.
I don't mind updating my plans for
So I would recommend any condition of approval come with the condition to clearly define all existing uses, existing square footages, the proposed uses, and the proposed square footages. In addition to that, there's a lot of talk about the modification of the use of the municipal lot to satisfy the parking requirement. As we heard a couple times tonight, it was at a 600-foot distance previously. In 2018, the ordinance was rewritten to tighten that rein in. And the way it reads today is that in order to satisfy your parking requirement for a private site, the parking shall be located within 300 feet walking distance of the principal use as measured from the geometric center of the parking facility. So I'm going to need some sort of evidence or demonstration that that condition is met. Otherwise, technically, this application from the change of use and intensification could potentially require relief from the parking requirement.
When I measured it, and this I think will help, when I measured it on the aerial map exhibit, it was about two-thirds from the front door doors of our project site to the municipal parking lot. It encompassed about two-thirds of that area. What I think I can do, if acceptable, is take my key map area of the minor site plan and turn that into an aerial exhibit and put a specific dimension or radius.
So I think you just nailed it right there. It doesn't say radius, it says walking distance, and I think that's the deal breaker for this application. If you want to look at your key map here and throw a scale up, I'm measuring a distance that exceeds 300.
For
walking from the closest
lot for our parking demand. Like, we would only have to satisfy 27, and at least 20 are available within 300 feet along First Avenue. So what I think I hear you saying is that as long as 7 parking spaces are within 300 feet in the municipal parking lot, we meet the demand.
That's not my interpretation of the way the code reads. It specifically references public parking lots, the geometric center of the parking facility located on Railroad Ave. I'm just being technical. I don't think it meets the exception for satisfying your parking requirement.
Would you request relief from that parking then for the 300 feet center?
If need be, that might be a good thing for the board to consider. But I honestly think the parking demand would pretty much be satisfied.
I agree with
along First Avenue.
What Omar is saying is right. The way in the code, the ordinance is written, the center of the lot is in walking distance, not as the code does. So you have to come out of this, look again, across the street.
Go down the alley.
Across to the center of that lot.
But the center of that lot wouldn't be where you would start measuring the 7 parking spaces for.
Understood.
Right, they would be closer as long as, and that's what I'm telling you I think exists. Like you said, if you go down Center Avenue to that group of parking spaces there, or if you go down the alleyway to that group of parking spaces there.
That's why I'm suggesting that you would like to incorporate that as relief in case when you do your calculations, it's maybe 301 feet to the center of that lot from that front door of Mr. Wickersham's building.
Right,
and the relief already.
And like I said, there are at least 20 parking spaces within 300 feet. There actually may be a few more along First Avenue, too. So if it makes sense to request that relief, I think that's appropriate. And then we'll demonstrate it, like I said, with an aerial image on the exhibit that makes it.
Come up with 301 feet to the center of that lot, the way the ordinance is written, then you're cutting the relief.
Right. Also, I don't think that we came up with a number of parking spots because the calculations are not.
Right. When I
show ballpark math that we
do. No, it's actual math in prep for tonight's meeting. What I show on the plan is a total requirement of 48 parking spaces, but the actual number, I think, for the property, based on my discussion, is only 27 parking spaces, and that would be 4.5 parking spaces per 1,000 square feet times the 5,945 square foot building footprint area.
I think, as Mr. Omar said, I think you need to see that and verify some of the
intentions.
It also reflects on the legal cases outside of that.
You might want to bring that up. I think
from a legal perspective, ladies and gentlemen, board, at any point with Mr. Rath, and I have the ordinance in question, at the time that my client bought the property in 2017, it was 600 feet, so it wouldn't matter whether it was from the center or from the site, well within the requirements. So he gets the benefit of a pre-existing non-conforming structure. I mean, that's the law.
He's here under the current ordinance.
Right.
And he requested
Yes, and I think we have a site to visit.
That's all I have to do is ask, and he can't still afford it.
Or get animal.
Okay, then we'll request it, and we'll, I guess we'll have to come back and have the new plans drawn.
Or, I think if the board sees fit to grant the relief, I think we demonstrate how many parking spaces are within the 300-foot limit, at least out to the center of that parking.
My suggestion would be if the board chooses to grant the application, that, you know, part of the condition will be revise your plan, get it to us before the next meeting.
Right.
So that before they adopt a resolution, Doug can get a look at it and confirm.
And confirm.
If not, we'll be asking you to pop back in.
Okay.
So you are requesting a relief from the center of the lot?
Yes, yeah.
Mr. Romeyer, that's agreeable to you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be very black and white when the existing and proposed square footages are placed on paper. I will ask that you, there was some mention, testimony regarding a salon or personal service business as a tenant.
Salon 68. I honestly don't know how they operate.
So if that doesn't fall under the office parking criteria, that be addressed properly in both the existing and the proposed condition. Okay. Signage, is there any discussion or testimony on the variances needed for the proposed signage?
No, we're not looking. Those signs were not really signs. They were temporary placards put in the window, which have been replaced. So some enough sign variances requested.
Okay. So at the end of the day, there will be any signage will be totally conforming with the code?
Correct.
Thank you.
Any further? Any questions from the public? Seeing none? Do we have any other witnesses?
No.
No. So now it's time for public comment. Seeing none.
Mr. Wood, anything in summation, or are you finished?
Just that Mr. Wickersham has been a benefactor of the town. I think that somebody has tried to get into Dr. Mulvey's office, closed his practice to new patients, or maybe Dr. Denoyer's, and for them, like to have a medical office where it could have telemedicine and have practice right on First Avenue. It would be a benefit to the family, something that would be very good. And Mr. Wickersham has built a building up. He's not here to brag about himself, but he can see he's done a good job with it. He has the funds to operate that building properly. And he did the town and really the area great service with the COVID-19 testing that was performed. And I just hope that the board will consider what kind of guy he is, the kind of operation that he runs, which would be top-notch. Stan, you testified, you would have the best pediatrician as his partner, and it would be very light use. It would be something that would be, I think, very good. And I think that we don't have that kind of testimony here tonight, so I'm just sort of summing up from, I think it's 8-8, but I really think that Mr. Wickersham, I know that's not an appropriate consideration, but get the benefit of the doubt. So.
Thank you very much. Board discussion.
I think it's a valuable asset for our town having, you know, something like that for, you know, use of services to medical. The policy needs to require parking and machine.
The parking is, I mean, anything on First Avenue, parking is always going to be a major issue. As long as we have that squared away.
We have the COVID test, so there's no running issues with parking.
We can bring this up last meeting, though, that happened when parking was
exactly
completely available.
Exactly.
You know, so I do think the intensity
does increase.
It's a very small.
So I think it's a matter of calculation of when I come back with some of the square footage and stuff like that to see what it is to truly make a determination.
It's a very small office, you know.
Yeah.
Two rooms, you're talking maximum of 4 patients an hour.
I mean, this specific change of use seems certainly reasonable. I think the grandfathering in of all of First Avenue, that concept could get us into trouble with future applications.
We're not actually grandfathering anything in.
Truth.
Right.
Yeah, just like conceptually that thought process. I mean, we are growing and have been growing.
I guess I'm just a little hazy on whether it's occupational physicals or telehealth or where is the business. I know it's medical, but what slices of the pie make up this medical business? I mean, is the, you know, who's coming in, who's doing it virtually, how does it work? You know, 4 people an hour, does it become 6, 8? I don't know.
If it ends up being less than one third of the building footprint area, if that doesn't really matter.
Right. I get that.
Anything else on the board?
I would make a motion to approve with the conditions that were discussed and the additional variance on parking, and that they satisfy with Mr. Rollmeyer's parking requirements for trial time.
It would be great for the town. 100%.
We need a second.
Second, Jocelyn.
Dr. Suzuwak?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Hawley?
Yes.
Mr. McGoldrick?
Yes.
Mr. Neff?
Yes.
Mr. Josko?
Yes.
Mr. Krupinski?
Yes.
Mr. Crowder?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
We're going to take a quick 5-minute break before we proceed.
Okay.
Can I have that
set of
pictures so I can start marking?
Oh, sure. And board, before we begin, can we make sure that our microphones are on and we're speaking into the microphones?
I think there's enough.
We need to make sure that our microphones are on and that we're speaking into the microphones when we're speaking.
True.
Okay, our next application, PB 22-10, block 17, lot 38, 54 Ocean Boulevard, Lambert. Application for bulk variances. Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong one. Wrong one.
I've moved.
This application is PB 22-08, block 87, lot 15, 35 East Garfield Avenue. Kelly, application for bulk variances.
Mr. Chairman, I've reviewed services in connection with the application services in order the board has jurisdiction to hear the case, and I'm aware of the following exhibits that the board has received in connection with the application. Exhibit A1 is a zoning review of the zoning officer of Michelle Clark, that's dated August 31, 2021. Exhibit A2 is an application for development that's dated August 31, 2021. Exhibit A3 is a variance application of Edwin Amanda Kelly. Exhibit A4 is a survey prepared by Richard E. Stockton dated August 5, 2019. Exhibit A5 are architectural elevation and floor plans prepared by Minkler Architecture and Design that's dated July 7, 2021. Exhibit A6 is the engineer CME's review number 1 dated April 29, 2022. And Mr. Kelly will be talking about Exhibit A7, which is a series of 4 photographs. And Mr. Kelly is here. Let me swear you in. You will swear affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I do.
Thank you. Name and address for the record.
thank you all for taking the time out of your summer evenings to come here and volunteer for the town. I've done this, well, I did this for a few years, as some of you remember. My name is Edward Kelly. I live at 35 East Garfield Avenue in Atlantic Highlands. I'm the property owner of 35 East Garfield. We've lived there for 19 years, and after 19 years of being harangued, I am finally hoping to fix the old garage. I'm not sure how old it is, but it's close to 100 years old. I do not believe that the requested variances would be contrary to the public interest. The proposed use does not conflict with the explicit purposes of the ordinance relating to modification and accessory structures. I believe that the proposed use does not alter the essential character of the neighborhood, and that is in fitting with the surrounding properties. And I don't believe the benefits to me outweigh any major detriments to my neighbors. And, you know, we can get into further details as you have questions and so on. And then I provided, per the engineer's letter, a series of four photographs. The first photograph is the front of the garage. The garage is approximately 15 feet tall at the peak. It is 17 feet wide and 20 feet deep. The second photo is the, as you're facing the garage, left-hand side. That is the side that opens up onto the inside of the property if you're looking at the survey which was provided. The next picture is the right-hand side, which shows the rather narrow side lot, 5 foot, 5 inch side lot set off between us and lot 14. And the last photograph shows the the rear set off, which is somewhere in the neighborhood. I think it's a little less than 3 feet. It also shows the garage of our neighbor behind us, which is approximately, I would say, two thirds or more of the width of their rear property line. It's about a 3-car garage. So that's just, that puts you some perspective. Another one of the questions that the engineer had was the height of the house. The house is 33 feet tall. It's a 2.5, 3-story house built in 1896. The garage plan and design is designed to coordinate aesthetically with the existing structure. All the neighboring properties have accessory structures. If you have any questions, or please let me know.
Any questions from the board?
So do you use the garage now as a garage? Or is it more of a shed?
I'd like to. I think we had one of our cars in there for probably the first few months that we lived here, but no, it's got the generator that we all need because of the aging power grid around here. It's got lawn care equipment and so on. What we'd like is some additional space that we can use, and that's why, rather than change the footprint, we've chosen to go up 5 feet so that from, you know, the existing loft, which we have stuff with furniture and lumber, we'd actually have a room and some stairs that we could go up and either store stuff there, or my wife has talked about having a private place to, you know, put a treadmill or something. But
so it'd be an 8-foot high loft?
Yeah, about 8 foot. Well, with dormers on the sides, the center would be 8 foot. Wouldn't be a full story. Yeah, I guess a half story.
And are any utilities going to the garage?
Just electric. I don't want to deal with plumbing or, you know, any of that stuff because I don't have to winterize it. We may put in climate control because if some of the stuff we store in there is furniture, and that may be a little more sensitive.
But it won't be a habitable space.
No, right. That is not. We don't intend to have a carriage house.
Gotcha. Mr. Romero.
Thank you. A couple questions for you. The construction methodology, your plans show new footings and slab?
Yes, is the existing correct? Structure has a slab, but no footings. So the back corner is settled over the years. We put in a helical pier to stabilize it, and when we went in there to dig out, we found there were no footings, which was when we decided we had to rebuild the whole thing.
Okay. Was there consideration made in relocating it to respect the rear setback? Currently, it's 1.4 feet. Accessory structures are required to be at 5 feet.
We did not think about moving it. We just wanted to use the existing footprint.
So your proposal is to maintain the 1.4 feet?
Correct.
And is the 1.4 feet going to measure from your rear property line to the exterior face of the building, or is that to the eaves?
I'm going to say that the 1.9 is good, because judging from the photo, which is the third photo, I'm going to say it's from the eave.
So your proposal is to maintain 1.4 feet setback from the rear to the eave of the proposed structure?
Correct.
Okay, because on your block, and you know it better than I do, on your piece of property, the lay of the land, the drainage is basically going to run back towards your rear property line, right?
Well, what we have in the yard is we already have a pre-existing, what do they call it, a can in the ground with the drainage things go into. So we're going to hope to tie into that.
You're going to connect the roof leaders from the new structure to your existing
driveway. Right now, there are no roof leaders. Right now, it's just drain. So some of them are going to either connect or direct towards it, towards the interior of the property, which will give the water some time to absorb before it runs out.
Okay. So your testimony is to direct roof runoff.
Yes.
To not directly to the property line, but allow it to dissipate its energy and infiltrate into your own property?
The plan is, if you look at the survey, there's a concrete slab in front of the garage. That's going to go. That's going to become gravel. We're not going to put the concrete back.
Oh, okay, because that'll enter the record. So
yeah, that's fine. I'm under
the entire concrete slab forward of the...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if I could just measure it for the record, we're talking 17 by 22. Sound right?
That's about right. It's a little bigger than the garage, which is 17 by 20. It's about the same.
Yeah. You could fit two cars on there.
Yeah, we could probably fit two. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. So that'll be converted to a gravel.
Right.
With the proposed addition, the proposed structure has a formalized fixed stair up to a second story. The architectural plans identify it as 199 square feet on the second story. Our code here captures that 199 square feet into the FAR calculation. So the 3 percentage points pushes this project further out of compliance with usable FAR. So accordingly, a D variance is required for this application for expansion, further expansion beyond the max FAR. And you mentioned it's not going to be habitable space, right?
Correct.
At this point, is it, if it's insulated and it's air conditioned and it's heated and it's not electricity, is the bathroom, is that what determines not being habitable?
We're getting testimony now that it's not going to be used as an apartment and it's not habitable, but yeah, I agree, a dwelling, we have the definition for dwelling unit, and the plumbing in the kitchen, I think, is the defining factor.
There'll be no gas, which is what the rest of the house has for heat and for cooking, and there'll be no plumbing.
No, I don't have it.
No. You know, that's an idea. I'm sure my neighbors would appreciate that. Talk about runoff.
My last question for you is, is there any proposed tree removal or impact to the existing vegetation?
No.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from the public? Seeing none. Any comments from the public? Any discussion?
Seems pretty straightforward. It's a big improvement if it looks like a drawing.
That's Mrs. Kelly back there knitting. You go up there and get me a brush.
Make a motion to accept. Approve.
Mr. Hawley?
Yes.
Mr. McGoldrick?
Yes.
Mr. Neff?
Yes.
Mr. Drosko?
Yes.
Mr. Kropinski?
Yes.
Mr. Crowder?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Mr. Brooke?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much, Mr. Kelly.
I'll need it. Thank you. And again, thank you for volunteering. This is it's an essential job. It takes a lot of time. I'm well aware of the sacrifice.
So much fun.
Mr. Chairman, the final application on the agenda for this evening is PB 22-117, lot 38, 50
lot
not being heard this evening. One of the neighbors contacted us and advised us that they were trying to engage council to raise their opposition, and they asked for the matter to be carried. The board doesn't have to carry the matter, but after the experience that we have with the court in the Denholz case, where we did not grant an adjournment to an objector, and the court found that we were unreasonable in not granting that adjournment, I advise Mr. Pepe that it would be wise to carry this matter until next month. So it's not going to be here this evening. I have a new service. The service is in order, so the board does have jurisdiction, and we're announcing now to the members of the public that this matter is going to be heard at the September meeting. I'm sorry, Aaron, what's the date?
September 1st.
September 1st. So if you have an interest in the Lambert's application, you need to be in this room at 7 p.m. on September 1st. This is the only notice that will be given as to that matter.
Well, before we go, I want to wish Mr. Kropinski a happy birthday. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Great job.
Thank you very much.